Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips. It's me, boy Brian, joined by my fantastic co-host, recently off his vacation, Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy?
Not as well rested as I feel like I should be after a vacation.
Well, here's the thing. Was it more of a vacation or more of a trip?
It was a trip, for sure. Yeah. We don't really do vacations, so.
Yeah, I feel like you and Gina are more of the, if we have the time to go somewhere and travel, we're going to do something.
Yeah, I don't really see a reason to just go sit on a beach when we go somewhere.
That's fair. Also, you know, it was Orlando, so there's the clear
thing
you want to do while you're down there. How was that, though? How were the parks? How was everything?
It was good. Parks were good. Golf was good. Got rained out one day, but we rain checked it and played again.
Yeah, so at least you got that rain check in. That would have sucked if you got rain checked and it's like, well, I live in Pennsylvania. I don't know. When I get back here.
Well, we got rain checked on Thursday and we were leaving on Monday. Thankfully, they could squeeze us in on Monday.
Yeah, that's nice. That's really nice. But obviously, we were down there in Orlando, not just for Rick to be on trip, but also for the Hack Across America golf trip. We will talk about that very shortly. But first, Rick, what do we got going on today in sports history?
We got something big in 1937. The Detroit Tigers score an MLB record 36 runs in the doubleheader versus the St. Louis Browns. They won 16-1 and then 20-7 in the following game.
27, that's a football score. That's
yes.
Well, I guess this
was
a bad
football score.
You say that was the 30s?
Yes, 37.
Man, that was still considered the dead ball era, too. It's interesting to see teams score that many runs back then.
Yeah.
Wow, that is a lot of scoring in a doubleheader. Those games must have lasted forever.
They had to be forever.
Like five-hour-long games.
Yeah.
Oh. I wonder if there was a rule in place as to when they stopped selling alcohol. I don't know if those rules
once they hit 15
existed
runs.
Yet. Yeah, once the 18th run is scored, it's they're charging again for alcohol.
1999, New Zealand wins their third Tri Nations rugby series.
Hey, there you go.
So, a little throwback to our rugby days there.
A little flashback to the college days. Back I couldn't handle that anymore.
Athletes.
My body would fall apart.
I would probably die the first time I took a hit to the head, so.
Yeah, that's fair. You should probably prevent that from happening at all costs. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I pretty much try to avoid. I hit my head all the time, though, at this point.
I don't think it's because you're clumsy either. It's just you have
When you have brain damage, your spatial awareness isn't as on point.
That's fair.
So, like, I just, like, hit my head randomly because my spatial awareness isn't what it used to be.
And it was over 6 foot. The world, you know, the people weren't supposed to be over 6 foot. So, I mean, you're just a freak of nature already.
You keep telling yourself that.
I am normal height, damn it.
Bring it full circle to golf here. We have in 2011 the PGA Championship at Atlanta Athletic Club. You know who won that year?
Ooh, 2011. Was it Rory?
Nope, it was Keegan Bradley.
Keegan Bradley, go ahead.
His first major title by one stroke.
Go ahead.
Three-hole playoff.
God, I love that in a three-hole playoff. That was did the FedEx Cup, was that that year or was that the year following?
It was definitely after. I'm not sure exactly when.
I think it's been 10 years of this, so maybe it was 2013. Close nonetheless, but we'll obviously talk about the FedEx Cup as we've already had the first stop of the St. Jude, big shakeup in the top 10. We'll talk about it. But first and foremost, we had our golf trip, the From the Tips guys went ahead and joined the Hack Across America group for the golf tournament. 20 golfers, 3 days of golf, one champion team. You bet your ass we got it done. I'll tell you what, all around great team effort out of Team Disney. Good stuff. You know, there's people are talking, you know, am I SEC coach of the year? And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to say yes or no if they want to give me that. No, I digress. But we got to golf together on the first day, which was awesome. Loved that. We were pretty bad. It was
but we were good enough.
But we
and that's what matters.
That is
we were bad, but we were good enough.
We got it done by some act of God. I don't know how we pulled it off. It was touch and go there for a little while.
Yeah.
But that course, just to talk about the course first, it was the Magnolia course at Disney World. So it was a resort course, but it was gorgeous. It had the you know, quintessential Mickey bunker, which I didn't wind up in, shockingly enough. I was trying to wind up in it, but of course I missed off to the right. Yeah. Because duh.
You're aiming for it. Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah, exactly. So I probably should have aimed the left of it and then I probably would have hit it.
Yeah.
I had the right club in hand too, because I did come short. So yeah, we would have nailed it had we actually hit the ball straight, which we don't do. But yeah, well, let's talk about the course first. I thought the course was incredible. The amenities were great. Every part, like the tee boxes were immaculate. The course itself was challenging, but not overly difficult by any means.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It's a great course. I love it. Partially because it actually, for those that don't know, used to host a PGA Tour event. It was the Walt Disney World Golf Classic was what they called it. Ooh. So all throughout the course, there's pictures of Tiger, Phil, like pretty much any famous golfer that you can think of. Let me see when they started. It looks like 1971 was when they started their golf tournament. And it ended in the early 2000s, I believe. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
It's like 2011, maybe.
They got pictures of Jack up, too. They have, you know, a bunch of the old greats as well.
Yeah. So I like it for that reason, because they did used to play a tournament here. So it's really fun to see how the course plays. It's a tough course, but it's overall really fun. And one of my favorite things that they just added is they added an 18-hole putting course.
Yeah.
On their massive putting green that they have. So they have this big putting green, which is for practice, obviously, before your round. But what they did was they cut out a bunch of holes. They put in a bunch of cup holders for your beers and your waters and whatever. And they made a little 18-hole putting course. And it's like every putt's a different length, different break, everything. So that was pretty fun. I didn't make it too far before we had to get going on our round. But that was definitely one of the highlights for me of that course.
I did the back nine of the putting course prior to starting off the round. And I was actually surprised at the diversity of each hole on the putting course. You know, you think you have one putting green. There's really not a whole lot that they can do with that surface. But they really, I mean, every putt was different, different length, different break. The reeds were all different because, you know, it might be the same hill in two holes in a row, but the hill's breaking two separate ways. And then it plateaus out of nowhere. And the 18th hole on the putting course is really funny because it's just on top of a hill. That if you miss it, it will roll back down the hill or roll over the hill. So I thought that was pretty meme culture of them. I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, that was super great. But also, what I liked most about that course was it was really well kept, and it didn't feel like it was out to get me in a way. We'll talk about the Saturday course as well, but it didn't feel like it was too damaging to my psyche. Like when obviously a front nine is always going to be different than a back nine. The back nine's usually going to be the harder of the two, but even the back nine, like as much as it did get more difficult, it didn't feel like it was trying to break me.
Yeah.
And you know, break my soul. And on that Friday, I didn't feel too much of a difference when it comes to the grass. I know we were talking about it before we went down. But on that Friday course, I really didn't feel much of a difference as far as the Bermuda grass to regular rye grass up here in in the Northeast United States. Did you feel much of a difference on Friday?
I struggled mightily with the Bermuda grass because I'm very much a big divot out of wherever I'm shooting person.
Yeah.
I don't tend to hit the ball very cleanly. So a lot of times I was just chunking balls and I easily could have cut at least 10 shots off my score if I just didn't chunk the ball. And it took me until day three to realize that I needed to just stop using my irons. So I literally just stopped using my irons and it helped me out a lot actually, because instead of the club just going into the ground, it bounced a little bit and I at least right. got the ball moving a little bit forward.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that, unless you experience it and you play both, or you at least play one more consistently. Like, I think when it comes to people that play in the South and play on Bermuda grass, when they come up north here, they're probably thinning every shot.
Yeah.
Because everything's a lot fluffier up here and it's a lot more, I guess I would say it's a lot more forgiving when you hit the ball fat, because your club isn't going to continue to dig into the ground. It will bounce back up.
Yeah.
Because I was having that problem on the second day, which we'll talk about soon here. But we wound up getting it done. We won our matchup, and we ended up winning the day as a team, 3-2. So this is Ryder Cup style. So we were going 3-2 into day two, which obviously you like being up, but you know there's still a lot that could happen. It's a very tight score, but I was really proud of everybody on my team. You know, shout out to I'll go down the entire list once we wrap up here, but definitely shout out to my squad for just getting the job done. I really enjoyed being able to build my team just based off of vibes and getting like my friends together and all my buddies and stuff. So that was super cool. But talk about the Saturday. So I struggled on Friday, but it wasn't an intense struggle. I went like, I think it was a 106 or something like that. Not bad, but not great at the same time. Like, I know I could be better. Saturday was tough. Saturday was a tough one. So we played Lake Buena Vista, which is another resort course at Disney. This one, a lot more difficult, a lot this longer, a lot more hazards, a lot more difficult to play. And that Saturday is when I really struggled with the Bermuda. I was shanking everything. I wasn't necessarily hitting it fat, but because obviously I come in contact with the ground before the ball, because I stink at golf, it felt like the heel of my club would catch and stop. And then on my follow through, the entire club would shift and I'm shanking it left. And I try to overcompensate. Now the toe gets stuck and I'm shanking it right.
Yeah.
My only confident shots were when my ball was slightly teed up in the rough. If I was on the fairway, which almost never happened that day, but when I was, it was a struggle fest. The entire time I was begging to be shooting out of the rough. Just because it felt more like being in the Northeast. I don't know if you had the same experience at this course, but I'd struggled so bad.
Yeah. So the first 2 days, I hadn't golfed in a little bit. It had been some time, but the first 2 days were kind of like warmups for me. I didn't really get comfortable with my driver until the third day. And the only shot that I felt comfortable with all weekend was my game around the greens. So pretty much like 75 and in was where I really felt comfortable. Saturday, for some reason, I couldn't get comfortable over my putter. Friday was a lot better, but Saturday, for some reason, like no matter what I did, I just wasn't feeling comfortable over it. I missed a lot of putts that I should have made and came back to make more of them on Sunday, which we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, definitely. All of my mid-range shots, I was not confident over almost any of them, because it seemed like anytime I grabbed a club mid-range, I was chunking it, unless I had my 3-wood. As long as I was hitting my 3-wood, I was fine, because again, I could hit the ground a little bit and it would still bounce back up enough that I could get the ball moving a little bit. And even if I hit a 200-yard 3-wood, it was better than a 5-yard chunk shot with my 6-iron.
Right. Yeah, I felt okay with my short game for the entire weekend. We'll talk about it on Sunday, but I was feeling pretty good about my short game. And I agree with you. My driver just would not come around for the first 2 days. Could not figure it out. It finally came around on Sunday, so I was able to take some sort of confidence out of there. But after those first 2 days, I was feeling pretty down about what was going on. But thankfully, to everybody on my team. They were able to get the job done when it needed to happen. I was fully carried by Dr. John on Saturday of Heck Cross America. He'll tell you, I'll tell you, everybody will tell you. The man just took me on his back. We scored a total of, I think, like 27 or something Stableford points. I think he scored 20 of them. You know, he basically just said, hop on, I'm getting the job done. We're getting the win, which we did. And the team won as well. We won 3-2 again on Saturday. So now we're 6-4 going into Sunday. You have a bit more of a cushion, but you can't have the collapse, right? The only way you lose is if you lose 4-1 on Sunday. All you had to do was not collapse. So I looked at the team, I looked at the matchups, and I figured I'm just going to top load three teams with the people that have been golfing the best the entire weekend, mm-hmm. and just hope and pray we can win at least two. So we go into Sunday. Now, this is the first not Disney course we played. We actually played one of the Orange County courses, which is Crooked Cat, which was where the Live Orlando stop was this year that Brooks Koepka won. Let's talk about the course, man. This course was immaculate. It was gorgeous, up and down the wall. It was just as hard as you would expect it to be.
Yep.
But the facilities were amazing. The golf carts were gorgeous. They still had a bunch of the Live marketing up in the clubhouse. That was awesome. How did you like the course, just from an optics perspective and experience?
Everything about the course was awesome except for the employees. Gina asked me, because obviously it's Disney, you're going to have immaculate service at Disney no matter where you're at, even golfing.
Right.
She asked me if I was sure that it wasn't because we just had 2 days there. And taking a step back and thinking about it, I'm 100% sure it wasn't because we were just at Disney for 2 days. The service there, the employees were not very helpful, friendly, or understanding. So one of the big issues that we had was right off the bat, apparently, this is my first year, so I obviously didn't know that this was a thing, but on the last day of the trip, everybody gathers on the first tee box, takes a group picture, yada, yada. These people would not let us do it.
Yep.
For some reason, I'm not really sure why. They said about timing, but it takes 3 seconds to take a picture, so I don't really know what your logical reasoning is there. But besides that, everything else was awesome. The facilities was awesome. I have a picture of the range balls that they had set up for us that we can post, which they had our, so obviously we were on a trip, so we had everything booked in advance. They knew we were coming. They had a whole section of their range just for us. And they had all of the balls for us on our range stacked in a pyramid, which I've never had before. I don't know how the physics of that works, but it does. And it was awesome. And I knocked it over almost immediately. But it was fun, and yeah, the course was awesome. I still think my ball got taken on that one par three because I hit a perfect shot and it was not there. You know, it happens.
It probably got stolen, and it was probably Tom because he got close to the pin and then he saw you maybe got tighter to it. And he was like, nope, gotta steal it.
Not happening. Take it.
No, but the I kind of agree with you. The service was pretty poor. Not the clubhouse service. The clubhouse was fine.
It was the starters and the
yeah, the starter place. and the ranger staff. They were very, I'm not gonna say like aggressive, but they were almost forcing us to hit into each other's groups.
Yes, they were.
And I understand that you're not a resort course and you don't have to, you know, pander to people who aren't golfers and stuff. But look, dude, if you have that large of a problem with groups like this, maybe not playing as fast, spread apart your tee times, man. This is a full blown issue across the United States. Once golf became more popular, they started forcing tee times in like 10-minute, 7-minute slots. You're crazy to try and fit that many people in that little amount of time. It's never going to work. It's always going to cause backup issues. I have yet to experience a round of golf ever since post-pandemic that I haven't had issues with either being slowed down by the people in front of me or the people behind me were going too fast. And it's this disparity where there's not enough time between tee times. I understand you're trying to maximize the amount of money you make. I get all that jazz, but golf courses, please spread out your tee times more. It'll make everybody's experience better. I 100% guarantee it to you.
Yeah.
But the course, the play, I wound up actually figuring my driver out, which was great. So I played exponentially better on Sunday, but the course, man, I could not imagine walking that course.
It was long.
Long and the hills on the fairways. That was nuts. Yeah. Like, you would be going up a 12-degree incline in your cart in the middle of the fairway.
Yeah, like it was rough.
There's like parts of the course that will punish you for hitting a good shot, which was crazy to me because you look at where you want your ball to go and you're like, yeah, honestly, I kind of want to spray it to the left or the right a little bit and be in the rough where it's more flat. Yeah. I mean, you were shooting uneven no matter where you were. It was pretty much a perfect example of what you would expect a PGA Tour or a professional course to look and play.
Yeah.
The greens were vicious. The fairways were nasty. The rough was thick. It was classic Florida golf, classic, which you would consider a professional golf course to look like. And, you know, after getting beaten down 2 days in a row, I was pretty much just okay with the beatdown I was going to receive. And I was able to kind of take a step back and kind of zoom out from how my golf game was going and instead focus on how the course was.
Yeah.
And man, it was impressive. It was an impressive course. I wish we didn't have an issue with the starter and the ranger and all that jazz, but the course was very nice, and I really enjoyed playing it. What about you?
My expectations were incredibly low the last day because I was paired up in the throwaway match with the worst golfer at the weekend. But,
like you mentioned, man, Zach Weed like that.
I mean, he won the the trash can.
That's fair. That's fair.
He did get the trash can. Point.
Yeah.
My expectations were incredibly low. I didn't expect it to be nearly as close as it was. Because I hadn't been playing well. And again, the guy I was playing with won the trash can. We only lost by like 7, which I was very impressed by.
That's crazy.
Which we should have lost by a lot more. But anyway, my expectations were very low. Vibes, though, were through the roof.
Sky
with our group. So that helped a lot. I played definitely my best round of the weekend. Felt really good, which was awesome because I had 2 more rounds of golf to play after that.
Yeah.
Which I performed better in both of those rounds than any of the ones over the weekend, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're fine. We got the wins are wins. Wins are wins.
But yeah, my crew's teams that I went out with were 2-1 on the 3 days, and we ended up getting the team dub. So
yeah, I wound up going 3-0, and I actually put myself in one of the throwaway matches on Sunday because I was playing so poorly, and we wound up still getting the win, which was a great experience to get the team another 3-2 victory on the day. Grand total for the weekend, we go ahead and we win the damn thing 9-6. I am so happy with the way my team performed. I am so thankful for everybody that was a part of Team Disney. Shout outs to John, Derek, Uncle Ralph, Colin, Rick, obviously, Chris, Tori, my fiance Ellie, and Zach Weed. Thank you so much, guys. I don't know if anybody is going to be listening to this other than maybe a couple of them, but fantastic experience. I've drank out of the trophy. It was incredible. I'm getting it plaqued now so that it can have the team name on there, and we'll get everybody to have their day with the cup or week or however long they wind up with it. What are you going to do with your time with the cup, Rick? What is your plan for the trophy?
I don't know. I honestly didn't think I'd get this far.
Look, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
I was not under the impression that I would get to hold on to it for a few days. I do not have anywhere to put it. So I'm not sure. I haven't gotten that far yet.
You got your day with the cup. You can put food in there, a drink in there. You can do whatever you want with that thing. As long as you give it a clean up afterwards. I get it.
For sure.
You
know, yeah.
Hit it with some dishwasher.
I don't know.
That was an incredible experience. Florida was a great trip. I'm super excited. And I'm sure you are too for next year, South Carolina, North Carolina. That's going to be a lot of fun. Congratulations to excuse me, Mr. Murray and Michael on being next year's captains. I love the fact that we're choosing captains now based off a dice roll. I love the randomness aspect of that. Because it gives more people opportunity to be in the captain's role, you know, because there's a disparity of quality of golfer on this trip. And it ranges mightily from, you know, mid-80s golfers to high 120s golfers. It's a wide range. So this gives more chance for more people to be able to be a captain and have that kind of experience. I'm happy that I don't have to be captain again. That was stressful. I don't request it ever again. If it winds up being, you know, the heart of the dice decides it's my time again, then so be it. But oh man, that was a whole time. But I'm excited to just enjoy it again. Excited that you're gonna keep being on it, which is great. So that's gonna be a really good time. So obviously, thank you to Heck Across America for putting the whole thing together. Thank you to Tom Reed for doing all the booking and stuff. Thank you to John Murray for being the organizer of the commish, getting it all done. And thanks to all the other guys associated with Heck that were helping on this trip. Guys like Bob and Colin and Ed, guys that were being helpful there. Thank you to everybody involved. It was an awesome trip, and we're excited for next year. But let's get into that professional golf action that we experienced as we had the FedEx Cup first stop, have the top 70 on the PGA Tour, battling it out, seeing who can make it into the top 50 for this week's coming BMW Championship. The winner of the St. Jude FedEx, Lucas Glover, the man who won a major with a Nike Square driver back in the 2000s, like a lunatic, getting the job done. Did you get to watch any of it?
I did. I watched most of Sunday. So pretty much like hole 8 on for the leaders, I watched. And I watched a little bit on like, what was it, Friday maybe? Thursday? When did I have off? Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously it was a heck of a weekend for Lucas Glover. One guy that I thought was going to be able to get it done and just didn't do it. Man, I really thought my guy Jordan Spieth was going to get it done. I really did.
You thought he was going to win?
I thought he was going to do it. I was getting excited. He was up there pretty much the entire tournament going into Saturday and Sunday and just couldn't get it done. He did get a T6 though, which is obviously good. That's quality. But you know, he just got lapped. Do you think, you know, and we're sitting here right now with Jordan Spieth being, let's see here, number 27 in the FedEx Cup standings. Do you think if he can get a top 2, maybe even a win or a top 5, do you think Jordan Spieth has a chance at winning this? Or do you think it, because of what happened at the St. Jude, it's just not likely?
I think he can win. And I will reference pretty much every other year where the person in first seems to just kind of play even keel all day on the first day. And everybody else works their butt off to get to where that person is. We saw it last year, and I would expect to see that from Jordan Spieth as well, assuming he makes it into the top 30 after this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be tough. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of good names up there. A lot of people playing really good golf. Lucas Glover went back to back. So obviously he's a problem, but I think the main person that we have to look out for, and I don't want to take away from Lucas Glover, we can talk about him a little bit more, but I think there is a problem, and his name is Patty Ice, because it's crunch time and he's back.
That man, he's basically Patty Diamonds at this point. When the pressure is at its highest and the lights are shining the brightest and the heat is on, Patty Ice performs, man. I did not expect a playoff to happen out of this tournament. And lo and behold, there it was, as Patty Ice takes it to a playoff. Obviously doesn't get it done in the playoff, but still jumped 4 spots on Sunday alone to get into that playoff. Had a 64 round 4. Yeah. It's honestly hard to explain because he's a guy you almost forget about during the regular season. He gets, you know, he performs admirably, obviously. Did he get a win this year? I can't remember. Let me look. Can't remember if he got a win.
I don't remember. Let me see. But two quick points on the top two guys. Lucas Glover, incredible putting all weekend. Whether it's because he's using the cheating putter, who knows? missed pretty much the exact same putt on 18 and then in the playoff as well. So that's kind of sucks. But up until that point, he was putting lights out. And let's not forget, again, on the Patrick Cantlay point, we were about an inch away from another playoff hole after he hit his first shot in the water.
Yep.
Like, if he doesn't hit his first shot in the water, I don't see any way that's even close, that hole.
Yeah.
But he hits his ball in the water and then still somehow comes back to almost take it to another playoff hole. Again, not taking anything away from Lucas Glover. Back-to-back wins as a 40-something-year-old is insane, especially at this time of year, especially when it's real feel 110 degrees out on some of these days. He was literally sticking his hands in ice buckets at every chance he got just to keep himself cool. And he's not a glove guy either, which is insane to me.
He's out here just raw dogging the golf club.
I don't understand how you can even hold on to the club at that point.
Pure insanity. Yeah, it's there is something to be said about the performance from Patrick Cantlay, especially, you know, you bring up a great point. If he doesn't put that ball in the water to the left there on 18, to be honest, I think he wins the tournament. I mean, Lucas Glover, as much as like it was a great win and, you know, good form doing the back to back and all that jazz, but like, I don't think he would have held him off. No, I think
long,
the reason
long term, he wouldn't have held him off. He was barely hanging on there at the end.
If that got to like playoff hole three or four, that's when Patty was going to do his business. You know, that's when he was going to be Patty Ice, you know, but Lucas Glover obviously gets the win, catapulting himself from 49 to 4, basically guaranteed you're playing the entire time in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Now, here's the thing, though. He catapults to 4, which means if he even performs well, if he performs top 10, top 5 in the BMW Championship, and the guys ahead of him in the standings, Jon Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, and Rory McIlroy, say they fall off the mark a little bit, he only has to make up 500 points.
Yeah.
He could be in striking distance going into the Tour Championship at the end of the season here.
Yep.
And Lucas Glover could be walking away with $15 million and the FedEx Cup trophy. How would you feel about that? Is this something that you enjoy watching, a guy like Lucas Glover just come out of nowhere by winning the first tournament in the FedEx Cup playoffs and just all of a sudden winning the entire thing? Do you like that about the aspect of how the FedEx Cup playoffs are run?
Yeah, because as much as I like watching guys like Scotty and John and JT, who's unfortunately not in, Jordan Spieth, it doesn't necessarily get tiring of talking of all the same names, but it does. It's a little refreshing when we have someone new, especially, like I said, he's what, 44, I think, or something like 43, 44.
He is
not exactly a young guy. And the fact that he's still competing at this level to this degree in a very important tour event after just winning the week before is very impressive. And I'm excited to see what he keeps doing. Do I think he's going to win? No, unfortunately I don't. I don't think he's going to be able to hang in there that long, but I'm excited to see him put on a show because he's been playing great all year. I remember at the beginning of the season, he was like up at the top of the leaderboard because he had a few good finishes, and we were like, well, he's going to be one of those people that just falls by the wayside after week 10 when people are actually back and playing regularly.
Yeah.
And he's just not. He's still there. So I'm excited to see what he continues to do as the season progresses to the end of it.
Hey guys, we're just going to take an aside here to hear from our partners. First up is ShankItGolf.com. Go ahead and visit their website. They got all sorts of things for you. They got golf towels, golf polos, stuff to mark your balls. They got all sorts of hats. They have everything that you're going to need to look your best on the golf course and feel your best on the golf course. Go ahead and at checkout, use code FTT15 for 15% off your order. You're not only helping yourself save money, but you're helping us get a little bit of that scratch on the side so we can bring you the best content that we can. Again, go ahead and check out shankitgolf.com for all your golf apparel needs. If you haven't heard before, Dr. John Murray is now a Titleist performance expert. That's right, he is someone who can help improve your body's swing connection. His medical background plus his Titleist certification can help you improve your golf game however you want. You want to have less pain? Dr. Murray can help. You want to create longevity in your career? He can help. Sick of getting out driven by your buddies? He can do that too. Check out Dr. John Murray at jmurraytpi on Instagram or reach out to him via email at jmurraytpi@gmail.com. Once again, that's jmurraytpi and jmurraytpi@gmail.com. I've already gone to him for my first screening. It went so well. I really felt like we identified some of the negative portions of my golf swing. I've already started doing my stretches to improve my golf game, and I'm interested to see how that translates into my second session. Go ahead and check him out on those platforms I listed already. He's great. He's great at what he does. All right, back to the episode. I mean, funny enough, though, when you kind of look at how the spring went for him, he did fall off the mark. He missed three cuts in a row from the RBC to the Wells Fargo. And then the RBC Canadian Open happened, T20. Then the Rocket Mortgage, T4, John Deere, T6, Barbasol, 5. Those are all three tournaments where guys, aren't really playing. You have your bigger names that aren't really performing. And he did it again. Did it early season and did it now. He's like, I'm getting my points when I can get my points. And that is what put him in the top 50 going into the FedEx Cup playoffs. And then, boom, back-to-back wins, the Wyndham and the FedEx. It's awesome to see. I agree with you. I think it is really refreshing to see something like that, see a guy like Lucas Glover in the top five of FedEx Cup points. It's John Rahm, Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Lucas Glover, Patrick Cantlay. That's your top five right now.
So funny.
It's really cool to see, man. It's really cool. And another thing that I like is when you look at the last of the top 10, the bottom five, Max Homa, Victor Hovland, Wyndham Clark, Brian Harman, Tommy Fleetwood. I'd be okay with any of those guys winning. Any single one of them,
Yeah.
And I'm still really rooting for Max Homa. I think he can get it done. He's close. He's not tight, but he's close. He's probably going to have to win one of these last two and get a top five to get it done. And probably some other dominoes are going to need to fall. But, I digress. So as we continue to move forward here into, obviously this FedEx Cup playoffs and future FedEx Cup playoffs, right? You brought it up. We got to talk about it. 110 degree real feel. Not only did one caddy wind up getting sidelined for the entire weekend after having heat stroke, but Jordan Spieth claimed that it clouded his decision making because it was just so hot he couldn't think right.
Yeah.
Simple question, I feel like, has been asked throughout the history of time and golf itself. Should professional players be allowed to wear shorts?
I'm going to answer your question, but I'm also going to state first that I have some massive beef that I have to get out there. Yes, they should be allowed to wear shorts. Okay. However, I got some beef with the sponsors that are choosing these people's outfits for Sunday. If your golfer that you are choosing an outfit for is in one of the final pairings and it's going to be 110 degrees, don't give them tan pants.
Don't do it.
Do not give them tan. Give them black. Give them a dark gray, maybe a navy blue. Lucas Glover played well. He played really well. My man looked like he pissed himself like six times over. he was sweating. And rightfully so. It was very hot out. Shorts aren't going to help that. If you're wearing tan shorts, you're still going to be sweating like that. If you're a sponsor and you're choosing outfits for your guys and they're in a final pairing, I don't care if you already have these things pre-selected.
Yeah.
Overnight ship them a pair of black pants. I guarantee you they're going to be fine.
I think navy blue would probably be the call I would make as a designer, obviously with my, perfect ideas of fashion. But really, you think about the tan pant when a guy is going to be an athlete for multiple hours, they're going to get swamp ass. That's just going to happen. Yeah. Right. And now we have to see it because the decision you made from your air conditioned office. Okay. I don't want to hear it. I agree with you, Rick. That is a poor taste and a piss poor decision. That's just bad news from the designer. Honestly, I'm impressed how well he played with all that swamp ass going on, because we were able to see it. My man was struggling. He was dying out there. So then the question still stands. Do you think they should wear shorts?
Yeah.
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 I feel like this shouldn't be a question. This is the 21st century, people. Okay.
Yeah.
When it's hot outside, people wear shorts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what sort of uprising you think is going to happen from there being exposed calves on the golf course. It's not like all of a sudden, you know, ankles are going to get exposed and you're going to have women running on the course and just dry humping golfers. Okay. Everybody will be fine. We've seen shorts before. Okay. Yeah. We're going to be okay. Right? Let the guys wear shorts. Goodness gracious. I feel like we don't even need to be having this conversation, but this is just a wild tradition, quote unquote, that the PGA Tour has. What's it gonna take? You had a caddy have a heat stroke, dude.
Yeah, and they get to wear shorts,
and they're allowed to wear shorts. But this should show you the problems with, especially maybe don't golf in Memphis in mid August.
Yeah, maybe maybe go a little north.
Yeah, I mean Memphis, Tennessee, probably not where you want to play golf in the middle of August.
Why don't we just take the Rocket Mortgage and make that course one of the playoff events?
Right.
That's in Detroit.
Why not? Right?
Like, that's probably much better than Memphis.
I would be inclined to agree with you. Hell, why not go back to Iowa? Okay, the weather up there is probably beautiful. Okay, it's probably gorgeous weather up there in the Midwest. But
Chicago. We're going to Chicago this week.
No, Chicago.
That's a great choice. Chicago's awesome. It's going to be probably 70s, maybe 80s. That's what we need. We don't need 110.
Yeah, you nailed that one. You definitely nailed that choice. Good on you. But, I mean, it's just I just don't understand how we keep having this conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Excuse me. Like, it's shorts. The world's not going to end. It's shorts. To continue, though, obviously congratulations to Lucas Glover on his win. Patty Ice is going to Patty Ice, et cetera, et cetera. But we move forward as now the top 50 are left for the BMW Championship. Got to talk about this here. Let's talk about some names that just barely made it and some that just barely missed it. Got to talk about Hideki Matsuyama. You got a former Masters winner holding on by a thread at 47. And you also have guys like Matt Fitzpatrick, who had a pretty good year, 39, just barely holding on. But the end caps and the beginning, the two guys that basically dictated, Patrick Rogers and Mackenzie Hughes. Mackenzie Hughes, 51. Patrick Rogers, 50. If you're Patrick Rogers, how relieved are you, A, to be able to play the BMW Championship? But, like, in your head, how likely do you think it is that you're going to get to the championship?
Almost none. I mean,
yeah.
Just looking at the guys ahead of you, like,
yeah,
almost none.
There's a less than 500 point gap between 50 and 30, though. So if by some act of a higher power, Patrick Rogers ends up winning the BMW Championship, he reasonably could catapult himself into the top 30.
He could. I don't see it happening, but he could.
Hey, I don't see it happening either. Some other guys to bring up that didn't make it. Some guys that I really thought had a chance to make it all the way this year because of the way they were playing, especially early. Guys like JJ Spahn and Taylor Montgomery. They had really good starts to the season, and I thought that they were going to do the thing where they got enough points at the beginning to catapult themselves in the playoffs. Yep. Obviously, they were able to play the St. Jude, just didn't hold on enough to get to the BMW Championship. And, you know, that's just how golf is sometimes. I believe Kevin Kisner said it best. Somebody's got to be the 50th best in the world and might as well be me. So
exactly.
But, you know, it's still a really high honor for a PGA golfer to be able to play in the FedEx Cup playoffs at all. So obviously congratulations to all those guys from 70 to 50. But unfortunately their seasons are over. Before we start highlighting the BMW Championship and all of the action going on there, there is some off course news here. As much as we don't want to take away from the on course stuff, there is some off course stuff going on, obviously about the Saudi Public Investment Fund and the PGA Tour merger. As Jay Monahan had his first sit-down interview with reporters since he returned from his leave of absence to address his health issues, he revealed a little detail about the status of how the negotiations are going, but he did say, quote, "We're hopeful that we're going to reach an agreement, but ultimately these conversations, we're going to get to a place where we feel like we have something that we recommend to the Tour Policy Board, and if we feel like we're in a position, then I think you can assume that you that we think it's going to get it done." He wound up adding, quote, "I'm determined and inspired to get there on behalf and for our players and for our fans." Definitely interesting, because obviously the way that it was portrayed when the news first released is that this thing was a done deal. Now, obviously, I'm pretty sure both sides are still going to guarantee that it is a done deal, but it looks like there's some back and forth about the details of what this final solution might look like, right? And as the year keeps ending, and as maybe the golf season starts to wind down, and even the calendar season starts to wind down, you start to wonder, A, when's this going to get done? And B, even if it's going to get done. I feel like we got to bring up the whole antitrust thing, okay? In the United States, there is such a thing as you can't be the only company to do something. You have to be able to let other companies do the thing you do, or else it would be a monopoly, which is illegal here in the United States. This would probably be considered a monopoly, as you basically canceled out any other chances of there being another league, and you actively did it on record in front of everybody. So I'm going to ask you, Rick, do you think, A, this gets done before the season concludes, so in the next 2 weeks, and B, do you think that it gets done at all, or do you think that the United States courts wind up stepping in and look to dig into this and maybe make a legal battle out of it?
Definitely don't see it finishing up by the end of the season. I don't even know if I see it finishing up within the next like year, because it takes forever sometimes when these legal battles go on, especially when there's going to be as much to look at as there is in this situation. Sport washing is going to be brought up, especially with what just happened with, who was it, Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Who just signed and got a crazy amount of money and deals and everything. Did you see that?
Yeah. You got a giving stupid him amount of money. Yeah.
500,000 euros per post.
Yep.
That praises Saudi Arabia. I mean, come on. Like that's obviously sport washing. There's no other way to put it. And they're going to bring that kind of stuff up, and whether it's relevant to the PGA Tour or not, it is relevant to the fact that it seems like we're at a kind of strange place. And I don't see the US government letting the Saudis have any control over a US-based professional organization.
I would be 100% in agreement with you. I really think that there are going to be some regulators once both parties pen this deal and they present it. I think there's definitely going to be some regulators that are going to find the devil in the details, as it were. There's going to be a lot of eyes on this, probably from the government side. And I highly doubt that in agreement with you, I highly doubt the United States lets the Saudis kind of come in unattested to attempt to pull this deal off. I think if the deal does end up going through all the way, it was because they made a really good look out of it and they just couldn't find anything, and it just winds up being the way it is.
Or the Saudis offer to pay off the U.S. national debt.
Yeah, or that. And then at that point, you wonder where they're just printing this money from. But either way. It's definitely going to be interesting moving forward as to how that's going to transpire. I find your point interesting that you don't think it's going to get done in the calendar year, because I'm not sure what they plan on doing with next season, let alone, you know, the season in 2024.
I don't even think they have any idea what they're going to do. I think this is all stuff that's going to be done as it comes, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of thought that, like I said, when they first dropped the news that this was happening, I kind of thought that it was like contract was in place and signed.
That's what they made it sound like originally.
Now they keep talking about negotiations, working out details, et cetera. And I was like, well, then you don't have a done deal. What was the point of announcing this? Now everybody's just got their binoculars staring at you, wondering what's going to happen now. You're trying to change the entire aspect of the sport worldwide. Do something, you know? So it's going to be interesting to keep track of that. But to keep moving forward here with some more off-course news. Billy Walters, who you probably don't know, but is a betting partner or a former betting partner slash bookie for Phil Mickelson. He wrote a book, and in the book, he talked about his experience working with Phil, and he said not only did he rack up $100 million in sports betting losses, but he even tried to bet $400,000 on the United States Ryder Cup team to win the 2012 Ryder Cup, in which he competed. Now, Mickelson said in a statement that he did not bet on the event. However, that does not mean he did not try. And look, Phil's gambling addiction is not any new news at all. You know, it's been reported. It's been a couple of years since that came down, but definitely interesting to see his betting partner slash bookie write a book about it. And basically just call him out for attempting to bet on the Ryder Cup that he was in. That's pretty much the shocking news out of this. Well, how do you feel about athletes gambling on their own sport?
I think this is maybe a hot take. Maybe it's not. I don't see any problem with an athlete betting on themselves to win.
I agree.
I don't, like, if you're betting on yourself to lose, that's different. Yep. If you're betting on yourself and your team to win, I don't see any issue with that. That makes no sense to me how that's a problem, because you're going to try to make your bet happen. You're going to try to win a game, which you're doing anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't understand.
A little bit extra cheddar on the side. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You don't have enough money. Millions isn't enough.
Clearly.
So you need more. I get it. I've been there. Once I became a millionaire, I wanted more.
But we always want, you know? Always want. You know what I mean?
But I don't see a problem with it. I don't see any issues with it.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I always thought it was a hot take too. I have not a single iota of a problem as long as the athlete is betting on themselves and their team to win.
Yeah.
Or they're just betting on different other parts of the league. You know, if
you're betting on a game that you're not involved in, also don't see a problem with that.
Yes, the Black Sox scandal in the early 1900s. Yeah, that's an issue. They took money to lose. That's different. Okay. He bet on the U.S. Ryder Cup team to win because he was going to try to win anyways, and now he's just trying to make some gambling money off of it. I really don't think it's an issue. I understand how you can kind of get, you know, into some weird things once you kind of start letting athletes start to do that, but I feel like, especially with the legalization of sports betting moving forward now and, you know, a bunch of states legalizing it, and why not, right? As long as they're betting on themselves to succeed, I feel like it's not a problem.
Yeah, I don't see an issue with it.
Yeah, I mean, but definitely interesting that he decided to bet on the Ryder Cup that he was in. That's wild. But heck, I mean, I'd bet on the United States winning the Ryder Cup. I already have. All right. Cashing in that bet so soon. I'm so ready for it. But to keep on keeping on, let's talk about the BMW Championship coming up. That is the PGA Tour's top 50 players all converging at the Olympia Fields North Course. In Chicago, right?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. In Chicago, probably going to be great weather. I'm going to assume it's not going to be
maybe a bit windy.
Maybe have a nice little breeze. That'd be great. But as of 28 minutes ago, our man, our myth, our legend, Rob Bolton, has dropped us some power rankings. Rick, are you ready?
Maybe.
I hope you are. All right. In no specific order, Patrick Cantlay, Victor Hovland, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler. That's a top five right there.
I'm glad the guy that I'm picking to win this week is at least on the list.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Victor, Rory, 5-1.
Right.
Victor, Rory, Cantlay, Rahm, Scheffler.
No. You didn't even get any of them right.
I got none of them right.
Not one.
Can I tell you who my pick to win this week is and see if they're at the top? They're probably not.
Who do you have?
I got Cantlay winning this week.
He's got him in second. Not in first.
I got him winning this week. He's my pick.
I like that. And that would make a lot of sense. Here's the top five in order. John Rahm, Victor Hovland, Scottie Scheffler, Patrick Cantlay, Rory McIlroy.
Ugh, I hate that.
Yeah, that's...
I absolutely hate that. Nope. Why is Rory at the top?
Hating that? That's not great. All right, well, hey, let's find out. He explains himself. We'll find out here. Number five, John Rahm, the imposing Spaniard, is defending two positions. While he's the most recent champion at Olympia Fields in 2020, the FedEx Cup leader also is boxing out to retain the opening lead at next week's Tour Championship. Yeah, it's kind of tight there in the top three if you look at it. He's only beating Scottie Scheffler by 148 points, and he's beating Rory McIlroy by 432. Rory would have to pretty much – it would either have to be John misses the cut and Rory goes in the top 10, or Rory would have to win.
You literally just have to get last.
Yeah. So that's probably not going to happen, but Scottie is right there, and I mean right there. And, you know, heaven forbid Patty Ice wins it, and he's going to skyrocket into first no matter what you do.
Yeah.
So – it's definitely tight up there at the top of the leaderboard. So he's defending on both fronts, but I really feel like five might be a little low on this list for John Rahm. I mean,
I definitely would put Victor behind him.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Victor Hovland. I do, but I feel like you look at this top five and you're like, one of these things just doesn't belong here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's Victor. Number four, Victor Hovland. The harder the course, the better he seems to perform. The statement will be put to test at Olympia Fields, where he debuted in the playoffs with a T40 in 2020. With a consistently stronger short game, he checks all of the boxes now. Yeah, and I think that's the reason that he's in the position that he's in nowadays, you know, in the FedEx Cup standings. He's number seven, and it's because of the short game. That finally came around. When he debuted on tour, it was like, this dude's short game is worse than mine. And he's finally come around with it. So definitely said he's a guy to look at for possibly winning this. I do kind of – I could see it.
I don't agree.
No?
And the reason being, he was in a position on Sunday this week with how everybody else was playing to hop up there and take this win from them, and he collapsed.
Yeah.
And yeah, you got to play better than that on – Sunday of a playoff.
And you know, that could just come with time and maturity. You know, he's still very young. He's still very young on tour. These are sometimes the teeth you have to cut out here on the tour. That's just how it goes. You're never gonna get given a win. That's just never gonna happen. Number three, Scottie Scheffler. After a rough week with the putter, he'll appreciate the tinier targets at Olympia Fields, T20 and 2020. His superpowers of piping drives and hitting greens are constants. Short of a win, the top spot to open at East Lakes is within reach. Yeah, like we said, he's right there in striking distance of John Rahm. The putting man. If he just had a putter this season, I think he'd have like a 1,500-point advantage going into the playoffs. It would have been ridiculous.
He just misses so many putts by so little.
And it's crazy. He just cannot get these putts to fall. It is wild. I'm imagining what it would be like this last season if he just had a putter, and holy cow, is it nice? It's very nice. Number two, Patty Ice, the two-time defending champion at the BMW Championship, plays T12 at Olympia Fields in 2020. He arrives this week as the victim in a playoff at the FedEx St. Jude Championship, the latest of seven top four finishes this season. This dude is a stone cold killer. FedEx Cup playoffs, and it's the BMW Championship, which he's won back-to-back already. If this man wins three BMW Championships back-to-back, you have to rename the tournament.
I get it. Rory's playing great. I don't understand how a man who is back-to-back champions at this tournament and you're saying has 7 top 4 finishes this year. I don't understand what your reasoning could possibly be for him not being number one.
Yeah, and honestly, just the fact that you put Rory at number one here kind of confuses me. He's been an absolute roller coaster this whole season. Now, yes, we could catch a hot week and he just dominates. Sure, that could happen. But if there's one thing you could almost consistently count on Rory McIlroy to do is to pretty much fall flat on his face when it matters. Obviously, he proved us wrong in that aspect last year when he won the whole thing. I get that, but A, that's super difficult to do back-to-back, and B, I don't think he's as good this year as he was last year, but let's find out. Yeah, I mean,
I'm not going to say he's not playing well. Yeah. But I don't know if he is going to be able to close it out with the guys that are going to be around him.
I agree. Let's find out what Rob says here, though. Number one, Rory McIlroy cobbled together a T12 at the BMW Championship in 2020, but that'd be a massive disappointment in his return, given that he's hung up 8 consecutive top 10s since the PGA Championship, second on tour in adjusted scoring. Yeah. I mean, he has been playing hot. I get that part, but I really feel like there's other guys out of this top 5, even if it's out of the top 10, that I could see winning anyways. My dark horse is Max Homa, who's ranked 7 on this list. Okay. I like it. I like it a lot. He's my dark horse for this tournament. Do you have one? Do you have a dark horse other than Patty Ice, I would say?
Yeah, he's not really a dark horse. My dark horse for this tournament is actually someone who I have very publicly shit on multiple times for his dressing and his outfits. But my dark horse this week is actually Ricky Fowler.
Ricky Fowler, come on! Yes.
I could see him putting it together this week. I really could.
That would be awesome, because if he puts it together this week, he's 12th in the FedEx Cup points, and he's only – all right, he's definitely got some distance to cover, though. He's 1,600 points out of first. So does this put him in a better position to win the FedEx Cup playoffs? Sure. There'd have to be some magic that happens in front of him here.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying he's going to win the playoffs, like, overall, the whole championship.
Right.
I'm just saying for this week, for some reason, I got this feeling.
Right. And then next week, we're probably going to talk about the same thing we talk about every year, is do you think the strokes thing is a good idea? We're going to say no. You all know what's going to happen. But let's watch some good golf here. The BMW Championship is one of my favorites. I mean, am I a little bit biased because I've been to one? A little bit. But it's one of my favorite tournaments to watch. The top 50 on tour is always awesome to watch. There's no bad golf when you're watching the top 50 guys. So that's always super exciting. Rick, unless you have any other golf news, that's going to do it.
No, not got nothing.
All righty, folks. As always, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate all you guys for hitting play on these episodes. Go ahead and follow us on our socials on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod and on Twitter at @FTT_pod. Would appreciate that so much, guys, just so we can give you that content. And you can feel free to reach out to us in the DMs. We will answer. We will talk about your questions on the podcast. We would love to interact with you guys any chance we can get. So please, 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 please hit follow. Go ahead and DM us. And again, thank you so much. As always, we out.
Thanks, guys. See you later.